So in our last class, was the last class that I taught anyway, we ended in chapter 5, and just for a quick review, we talked about, we saw that in chapter 5 where it talked about this new generation and how this new generation was circumcised and their need of this because none of those had been circumcised. And then we also saw that they had the first Passover that was in Canaan. And then on the following day, they ate produce of the land for the first time. And then the day after that, so 16th day, manna ceased. So we saw those things. And then at the very end of it, we saw this idea that there was a commander or a captain of the Lord's host. And we could tell by the way that Joshua was treating him, or based on what was said by this Lord of the host, we know that this was one of the Godhead. If you remember, Joshua, well, first off, this was kind of like a picture of one ready for battle. Joshua's near Jericho, and he sees a man standing with his sword drawn. So then he goes up to the man and he asks him, basically, are you for us or against us? Are you with us or against us? And then in verse 14, he said, no, rather, I indeed come now as captain of the host of the Lord. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down. And he said to him, what has my Lord to say to his servant? And then the captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. And we talked about that. This idea, it wasn't that it was just because this particular spot in the ground, is because who he was standing before. So he was standing before one of the Godhead. So as we go into chapter 6, let's consider that. And let's remember, you know, that's in chapter 6, we're going to start looking at what they did in Jericho. In chapter 6 and 7, now I've coupled these together because chapter 7 is going to be something that we look at that is a result, if you will, because of chapter 6, as far as the Achan's sin and the defeat at Ai. So, but that was what the sin was, what took place during this Jericho. So basically, I put this in 5 different sections. Chapter 6, 1 through 5. We can see the Lord gives Joshua instructions on how to take Jericho. And then in 6 through 21, talks about Jericho being taken. And then in 22 through 25, talks about how Rahab and her house, or her father's household, were spared, as she was told that it would be. And then 26 and 27 talks about a curse that is on Jericho. And then you get into chapter 7. And 7, 1 through 26 talks about how Israel was defeated at Ai because of Achan's sin. So we'll start in 6, 1. Now the Lord tells Joshua that he has given Jericho into his hands. We'll read the first two verses. It says, "Now Jericho was tightly shut because of the sons of Israel. No one went out and no one came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand.'" So, and with its kings and its valiant warriors. So we see this idea that the Lord has given Jericho into their hands. And it makes me wonder when I was reading some of this, not really wonder, but I pose a question. You know, when the Lord says this, does Joshua believe him? It's yes, and not quite a trick question. I'm going somewhere with this, but yes, he does believe him. But let's read verses 3-5. And it says, "And you shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. You shall do so for 6 days. Also, 7 priests shall carry 7 trumpets of ram horns before the ark. Then on the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times. And the priests shall blow the trumpets. And it shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout. And the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people will go up, every man straight ahead." So, we see what was described here. And first off, is this how you would normally take a city? Is this how battle usually is? So it's unique. There's some differences in it. And when you think about it and you consider what was said, that was why I kind of posed the question, does Joshua believe God? It's an easy question. He does. But in verse 6, if he didn't, you know, it doesn't start off saying, "And Joshua began to question the Lord," or "And Joshua asked the Lord." It doesn't do that. The Lord gives instructions, and then you have verse 6, and it says, "So." So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant, and let 7 priests carry 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord." And then he said to the people, "Go forward and march around the city, and let the armed men go on before the Ark of the Lord." So he received his instruction, and then he starts instructing. So what would you call that? Him believing in that sense? Faith, okay. And if you go over to Hebrews 11:30, it is called faith. It says, "By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down." So these, first, Joshua has faith in what the Lord tells him, and then the people have faith, and they do as what they were instructed. So now, if they're doing what they were instructed in order for this to happen, was it just faith? So it wasn't faith only, because you see in the later half of verse 30, it says after. So by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. So there was action. So after they did this, then this took place. And you know, we looked at that also, we saw the idea when we talked about in chapter 2 when we were talking about Rahab. Because what she did was acting on her faith, believing in what she had heard about this Lord. And so now it's different in Joshua's case, but it's still it's a faith. And, you know, because Rahab was acting according to what they have heard, because it made it clear that people were hearing what was going on about this great God, this mighty God, the God of Israel. And so, like the kings, Sihon and Og, that were destroyed, and the different things that they had heard about, and when, of course, it even looked back at that time, it was looking back that when they had crossed, when they had exited Egypt. So, this here shows, or is an example of faith. And like we just looked at, even Hebrews 11:30 says that it is. And, you know, just things for us to consider, because I think I've made a couple of little points, not any much points as far as application or things for us to consider as us, as Christians. You know, we see this idea of acting upon faith. I was thinking about Naaman in 2 Kings, because when you think about him and when he had his leprosy and he was wanting to be cured, and then we see in 2 Kings 5:10, you can turn over there if you'd like, 2 Kings 5:10. But we see that Elijah sends a messenger to tell him to go and wash 7 times in the Jordan, in order for him to be clean and his flesh be restored. And I'm just doing pieces here. I'm not going in great detail. But so basically, he didn't believe. And then when you look at verse 11, it's kind of the idea that he already had something in mind on how this would take place, because he said, but Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper." So there was already something in mind that would take place. But then he was reasoned with, or he reasoned that it was logical to use the Jordan in verse 12. You know, are not Abinol and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he returned and went away in a rage. You know, he had ideas of how this might, should have happened, instead of just saying, having faith that this is what you were told to do. Go and do that. And then basically in verse 13, that's when his servant came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?" So at that point, he was put in his place. He was taught, he was convinced. So he acted upon it, and he went down and dipped himself 7 times as instructed in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Because he acted upon his faith, He was clean. And we just consider us. And we know this. But it's just a good point for us to consider. You know, we too, when we acted upon our faith, had a result. Now, we could think of Mark 16. We can look at that. Mark 16, 15 and 16. Or 16. We won't look at 15. But basically, he who has believed, so we have faith, he who has believed and has been baptized or acts upon that faith shall be saved. And this is stuff that we know. I just, when I was studying some of this, there's just some thoughts that come to mind and things that we can consider. You know, when we're looking back at some of these other things where we're seeing that people were acting upon faith. Now, it wasn't like us. We're acting upon our faith in Jesus, but faith is a belief. You know, it is showing that they believed. And back even when we were looking at Hebrews 11, is Hebrews 11, when you look at that, I mean, look at verse 2. For if by it, talking about faith from verse 1, the men of old gained approval. The men of old. So it's just talking about how they were gaining favor from God, but their faith wasn't faith in Jesus. It's just talking about their faith, their belief, and whatever it was. You have different examples here. So that's something for us to consider. So as we see in the example with the taking of Jericho, because of their faith and their action based on it, they had success. God gave them success. We're not going to look in a whole lot of detail when we started off in Joshua 6. We did see a little bit of what the Lord was instructing Joshua for them to do. And then if you've read the story, you see the detail of the things that they were supposed to do, and then we see from the end of it, we understand that they did as they were instructed. So we're not going to go into a lot of detail of all the actual things that they did, but we know that they were instructed to do, and they did. So, now a little further on the lesson, I noted that in an earlier class, I had mentioned that there are a lot of references to the ark in chapters 3, 4, and 6. So remember in chapter 3, consider what they saw as the water was pulled back and they were able to cross the Jordan on dry land. And then in chapter 4, when placing the memorial stones again, the waters parted and dry land appears in order for them to do this. So what was present during this time, during these cases? It was the ark. So once again, these supernatural things are going to take place, and the ark is leading the way. But how were they able to do this? Remember, we talked about it in one of the classes. Is it just the ark? We looked at examples showing that it's not. Who made it possible? God. God did. And I also put on here to compare verses 4, 6, and 8. So let's look at verses 4, 6, and 8 for a second. When referring to the ark, we see it stated in different terms in these three verses. So I just wanted us to note what is said in each verse behind the statement. You know, you have this statement in all three verses that seven priests shall carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before. Before what? So verse 4, it says that they are to do this before the ark. What about verse 6? What are they to do this before? What do they call it? Okay, the Ark of the Covenant. Did you say Ark of the Lord? Okay.
His wife.
Oh, okay. I thought she was just reading from a different version. You're correct. That is correct. That is true, and this is a good example that sometimes when people ask a question, they have a certain thing in mind. That is correct. But I was looking for the Ark of the Covenant. And there's a reason why. So verse 4, we see it just states it as the Ark. And then kind of builds upon it. Verse 6, the Ark of the Lord. What does it call it in verse 8?
Ark of the Covenant
of the Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, again, you are correct. Okay, let's read verse 8. Let's read verse 8. You're correct in your statement, but I was still correct in my thought. Verse 8. And the reason why I'm saying what is it called here, because the point I'm trying to bring up is one part of the verse doesn't even mention the ark. But it's still talking about the same thing. Because it's right behind this phrase that we were talking about. So verse 8, and it was so that when Joshua had spoken to the people, the seven priests carrying the seven trumpets of ram horns before what?
The Lord.
Okay, before the Lord. It is God's power that gives them success. It's God's grace. It's not out of their wisdom or out of their own power or goodness. It was God's favor because He said to do this. They believed it. They acted upon it. And they received favor. So they had success. So they were faithful and did as the Lord said, and He allowed them success. Verse 16 says, "For the Lord has given you the city." Now, during this, there was a ban. So the city was put under a ban. And they were warned this in verse 18. And verses 17 and 19 talk about some things that are excluded from this ban. So let's read 17 through 19. Verses 17 through 19. Says, "And the city shall be under the ban, it and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban." lest you covet them and take some of the things under the ban. So you would make the camp of Israel accursed and bring trouble on it. But all the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. So we see some warnings, don't we? They're warned not to covet, not to take these things. Yes, they're tempting, but they're for the Lord. And there's a true statement. They are tempting. And someone acted upon that. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But we see, I did pose a question on here. 17 and 19 talk about some things that are excluded from this ban. So what are some things that are excluded from the ban? Rahab, okay. So Rahab, the harlot, and those that were in her house, you know, because she followed the instructions to put the red cord. Yeah, I'm sorry, ribbon cord. So she followed that instructions because of the agreement they had, and that was honored. So only Rahab and the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. And then what are some other things that are under the ban? Okay, so the silver, the gold, the articles of bronze, iron, they're holy to the Lord. And they should go into the treasury of the Lord. And then also in verse 24, you see that in the later part of the verse as well. It says, only the silver and the gold and the articles of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. So, these things that were under the ban, well, you had that, and then everything else was to be destroyed. So, if that's the instructions, that you're just to destroy the other things, is that important? Okay. So it's important. And then in the following chapter, we're going to see the importance of this. So, we see, as it was mentioned, Rahab and her father's household, they're spared. And in verse 22, it tells us that Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, and he told them to go into the harlot's house and bring out Rahab and all she has out of there, as was sworn to her. And then 23, the young men do this. The young men who were the spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brothers and all she had. They also brought out all her relatives and placed them outside the camp of Israel. And then verse 24 says that they burned the city with fire and all that was in it, except for, like we just read, this the silver and the gold and the things that were under the ban. However, Rahab the harlot and her father's household and all she had, Joshua spared. And that was because of the agreement. And it says also that she had lived in the midst of Israel to this day. Then, not to this day, but when written, for or because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. So we see they were to honor what they had sworn to her. She did as she was instructed. She held up her end of the bargain, and they held up their end of the bargain because of the agreement or the covenant they have.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
This statement to this day, the timing in it, to some degree, well, at least on this part of Joshua, when it was written, within the lifetime, evidently,
of Rahab.
Of Rahab.
Yes, sir.
Which means that these marvelous things that are said that seem so incredible, had they not happened, it would have been debunked by the people that lived then.
Correct.
In their lifetime.
Yes, sir. Good point, Steve. Any other comments or thoughts? Or so, curse on Jericho. It is to be no more. We see from verse 25 that those who were spared, Rahab and her father's household, they were spared, but no longer would they be in Jericho, as we just read. And that she would live in the midst of Israel. And then we saw in verse 24 that it was destroyed by fire. They burned it and all that was in it. And then Joshua, verse 26, made them take an oath at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord is the man who rises up and builds this city Jericho. With the loss of his firstborn, he shall lay its foundation. And with the loss of his youngest son, he shall set up its gates." So we see this short little section about this curse on Jericho. In chapter 7. Again, like I started off in class, we coupled, or I coupled 7 with 6 because of it's really a result of something that happened in chapter 6. It wasn't stated in 6, but it'll be brought out in 7. So I posed the question on the lesson, what took place? Why weren't they able to defeat Ai? Was it just because they were outnumbered by Ai? Was that the problem? Okay. Well, verse 1, I mean, it kind of starts off explaining what the problem was. Let's read verse 1. It says, "But the sons," and this is chapter 7, verse 1. "But the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban." Okay, so we see something going on here. They were unfaithful according to this ban, or in regard to the things under the ban. Sons of Israel is what it's stating. Then it says, "For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban." Therefore, or because of this, because this took place, the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. So we see, and we'll see more when we go further into it, but this was one man's action in this case. Brought this upon the sons of Israel. And God even stated, sandwiched, well, Achan sandwiched in there, but he says, the sons of Israel, the sons of Israel. And we'll look more of that here in just a second. So, we see here in this first little part, we see the idea that the Lord was angry with them. And because, like he said, they acted unfaithful in regard to the things under the ban. We're going to see in a minute, it's not like they all got together and they acted upon it, but because these things were under the ban, they were all were to follow that. So they were unfaithful in this. And as we read on, we're going to see kind of a result of this, or a result of how they dealt with these things and that were taken from Jericho. And note in verse 2 that Joshua apparently wasn't aware of the problem at this time, at this point. So we've got this description in verse 1. It's talking about, hey, there's a problem. The Lord's angry with the sons of Israel because of something Achan did. And then it starts hashing out the story, if you will, or giving some more detail. So verse 2. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth-Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, go up and spy out the land. So the men went up and spied out Ai. So, by him doing this, of course, this would make you think there's no reason for Joshua to think that there's any problem. He sends them out. He sends these guys to go spy out the land. Verse 3, and they returned to Joshua and said to him, don't let all the people go up. Only about 2,000 or 3,000 men need to go up to Ai. Don't make all the people toil up there, for they are few. And that's why I kind of posed the question earlier, were they outnumbered? No, they weren't outnumbered. It states here that there was only few in Ai. And, you know, the spies even said, no, we don't need to send everybody. Let's just send this amount. So, as we build upon this, we're still going to see that what the problem is isn't because of being outnumbered. It's not because they didn't have enough men to handle this. It's not about those men at all. It's about what verse 1 stated. So, the spies say there are few. So verse 4, about 3,000 men from the people went up there. But they fled from the men of Ai. And the men of Ai struck down about 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Shebarim and struck them down on the descent. So the hearts of the people melted and became as water. It didn't go as planned. Yes, there was only few men, but they are not going to have success. Again, the success that they have, and we'll see in future battles and such, is because of the Lord. And verse 1 just stated, he's not happy. So, at that time, Joshua didn't know what was going on. He's starting to get an idea now, or knows something's wrong. So verse 6, we see Joshua's reaction. We see what he does. He tears his clothes and falls to the earth on his face before the Lord. He and the elders of Israel. and they put dust on their heads. Let's read verses 7 and 8, and then we'll let's think about something for a minute. Okay, verses 7 and 8. So, verse 6, well, all those things are happening, not according to plan. Verse 6, Joshua tears his clothes, fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord. Verse 7, and Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord God, why didst thou ever bring this people over the Jordan, only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before their enemies?" When you read that, who does it kind of sound like Joshua might be blaming for them not having success? God. Okay. He's blaming God. Now, it's true God didn't allow them to have success, but again, verse 1. It was based on the actions of Achan. They did not follow the ban. So, something for us to consider for 1 minute, it looks like. When things go on with us, when things go wrong, is that the first place we go to? Hopefully not. But do we blame that on God? This is kind of a good example for us to think, well, maybe we're looking in the wrong place. Maybe we need to consider some things that are going on. But just because something goes wrong doesn't mean that it's God's fault. So, something for us to consider, you know, because when things happen that are rough, it might be some rough things going through, and that might be first place someone's thoughts go to, and that's the wrong place. It looks like I'm a minute over. Well, up there I'm a minute over. I'm right on time here, so nobody's buzzed, but we'll stop there, and in the next class we'll pick up here on where I've got it called section 5. So we can just pick up there. Thank you for your comments and your attention.